Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, good news on the economy. Let me just pause and let that sink in for a moment. It's not historically good. It's pretty much pedestrian from earlier times in recent American history. But compared to where things have been recently on the growth of the economy, 2.5% in the third quarter, that's pretty darn good. It'll still be revised one direction or another, probably a little bit in the coming weeks. But compared to the fact that in the last quarter we were barely north of zero, this is good. It's still nowhere near the projections that Obama put out in 2009 about job creation and paying off the debt incurred by the stimulus and so forth. But at least it's better than what we had last quarter, and it's almost in the neighborhood of pretty healthy growth if we can sustain it.
Greg, I think there's some sort of mistake here. I'm getting this is from the archives of 2007 or so, right? No, actually, wait. Okay, clearly this isn't from 2007 because we're actually pretty happy at about a 2.5% growth rate. This is the good martini. We're putting on the party hats. back during the Bush years, that actually be kind of disappointing. So, yeah, I think that probably says a lot about it. And I don't mind making this the good martini because it really does suggest that we're probably not going to go into a full-blown recession. I could hear listeners saying, wait a minute, we're in one. What do you mean we're not going into one? We're probably not going to have a double-dip recession. Now, I heard somebody use the phrase bouncing along the bottom to describe the housing markets recently, and that probably is what this feels like. But there was some improvement in terms of consumer spending. It's worth noting that Obama's economic projections, which were always too rosy, but I think the most recent ones said that we would have 3% growth this year and 4% growth for the 5 years after that. And obviously, you know, remember, we all made fun of Tim Pawlenty for being on drugs for projecting for trying to aim for a 5% growth rate. So Obama's projection is perfectly normal. Pawlenty's was crazy. And here we are beneath their 3% one, which I guess in their mind was the modest projection. But having said that, in light of recent history, a 2.5% growth rate, pretty good. by the low standard, by the soft bigotry of low expectations, this is a pretty decent amount of, you know, new round of economic numbers.
You took the line right out of my mouth. It kind of reminds me a little bit from Al Gore's 1992 convention speech, if folks can remember that back that far. But one of the things he kept saying about the Bush-Quayle administration was, everything that's down should be up, and everything that's up should be down. And, you know, we talk
that's
about
a pretty good impression, Greg. wonder how long you've had that one in storage, ready to roll out there.
Well, probably pretty close to about 20 years now, since that's when he's been on the scene. But
I have to say lockbox.
Lockbox. But you look at the projections for growth, and they're better than they were last quarter, but they're still not anywhere near the projections. And then, of course, you had the projections on what would happen to the unemployment rate if the stimulus passed. And, well, that was – we ended up way higher than that. So they're not – basing their low expectations in the right ways here. But nonetheless, 2.5%, we'll take it, but we expect better moving along here, and hopefully that will happen. Martini number two now, and on to Occupation Wall Street, Oakland version. And this is the scene probably the most violent protest to date. If anyone's ever seen an Oakland Raiders home game, this should come as no surprise to you. There's just an interesting mix of folks out there. It was time for the folks to clear the square or whatever public place they were holding this rally. In the past, they've threatened the press to stay out. Of course, the press themselves apparently have no reason to report that. There's been violence, and there's been all sorts of other things. So finally, when the time came for these people to vacate, and they did not vacate, the police came at them with tear gas and some other things. And so a few folks were injured. And, of course, the morning show on MSNBC, horrified. Here's Harold Ford, Joe Scarborough, and Willie Geist.
These people are protesting about jobs and their incomes. They have every right to. Why the police would engage themselves this way is just...
Willie, what are your thoughts of the overreaction by the Oakland police and what it means for the bigger movement?
I'm always careful to hear the whole story first.
Exactly.
I want to know what happened, but to me, using tear gas on peaceful demonstrations is pretty unconscionable. Again, the police, we don't know the circumstances, but if you can't contain a group of young kids protesting about jobs by other means, you might want to reevaluate your police work.
Jim, the spin on this is absolutely ridiculous when even the limited media coverage of the violence there has been pretty clear on the violence that's taken place. So this ongoing spin job by MSNBC and these other liberal outfits that these are just people struggling to try and get by and that they just want the rich to pay their fair share is really nauseating.
Yeah, Con Carroll has a good story on this in the Washington Examiner, and he points out that, look, last week the protesters pepper sprayed and beat a homeless man. The Oakland Police Department was called in to investigate a separate assault on a member of the press. The occupiers surrounded the cops, chased them out of the park, chanting, "Cops go home," and then issued an edict banning the media from the plaza. The Oakland police aren't doing this in a vacuum. It's not because Mr. Monopoly has decided that, you know, he can't put up with protests in Oakland, of all places. The eviction notice said, increasing frequency of violence, assaults, threats, and intimidation. I suppose there is this 60s Kent State mentality that some of these, you know, aging baby boomers want to, shoehorn this into. I just kind of find it fascinating that this is the power of narratives in our media today, where no one really bothers to look that hard at what's going on. They just kind of plug it into these things. Maybe it's the power of pictures. Maybe it's the power of seeing tear gas in the streets, etc. But I am very unimpressed at how the media doesn't really want to look into inconvenient narratives, i.e., look, this is, you made the Oakland Raiders joke earlier, but let's face it. I mean, the Oakland Raiders games have tended to be rough places in which you don't necessarily get these, you know, kumbaya-ish moments. This is not a kumbaya-ish protest. This is, you know, a rather violent and dangerous environment. The cops are trying to do their jobs, and, you know, Joe Scarborough and the gang have decided to demonize them for trying to do their jobs.
Yeah, this goes right back to the 60s, like you mentioned, and I think we might see, hopefully, the resurrection of the silent majority, which I don't think necessarily went away, but once the police start being demonized for just trying to keep basic order, I think that might be the point where a lot of folks who haven't otherwise paid a lot of attention start to pay more attention. And just to back up the previous point, somebody got shot at a Raiders 49ers preseason game this year to the point where they're not even thinking about ever having that game again. So if that's what happens in the preseason, and we know what happens at the football games, and so this violence in the midst of these Wall Street protests should come as no surprise. So on to our martini number three now, Jim. And unfortunately, the crazy one once again refers to a candidate in the Republican presidential field. This time, it's a Texas Governor Rick Perry, and it has nothing to do with his tax plan that has gotten a lot of attention and, for the most part, among conservatives, pretty strong reviews this week. But one of the things he has not done very well, of course, is debate. He did a little bit better in the last one, but the first couple out of the gate when he really had the momentum did not go well, to say the least. And now Rick Perry's campaign staff is suggesting that he's going to do at least one more debate in Michigan, but after that, all bets are off because there are too many and he has to spend time in the key states to try and obviously do as well as possible heading into these early contests. Jim, skipping debates might not be a horrible idea for Rick Perry given his previous performances, but if you are out of sight, you're usually out of mind in these things. And Perry has got to come out and try to regain whatever momentum he can, because if he trudges into these early contests where he is right now, he's going to get creamed.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I can understand a candidate's, you know, finding the debates tiresome. I can understand having some real complaints about the format of them, complaints about the moderators, a sense that how am I supposed to explain my economic plan in 30 seconds or less. But having said that, look, the debates are when you and I and a good chunk of the listeners and a good chunk of the readers of Campaign Spot and basically everybody who's following this race closely, everybody who feels really, you know, the political junkies of the world, they watch. This is your chance to make your sales pitch. This is your chance to shine. And, you know, obviously Perry had a bunch of really rough, you know, times in his early debates. I think he was better in the last one, or at least had a little more pugnaciousness there. But I have this feeling like if he decides to skip on some of these, and apparently one of the ones he's thinking of skipping on is sponsored by Heritage Foundation and American Enterprise Institute. I mean, you wouldn't want to snub those guys, right?
Not usually.
You know, if you're trying to be the conservative candidate in the race. So the idea that Perry thinks that he can get ahead by not participating, I think is pretty wrongheaded. And it's just going to raise that question of, I wonder how badly he wants this. He had a very, you know, happy, comfortable, successful term as governor in Texas there. And there was a certain question of, clearly this is a guy who is not, you know, over consumed with ambition to be president of the United States. When a candidate starts taking events off, you begin to wonder, all right, is this something he's really doing because he really wants to do it? Or is there some part of his heart that just isn't in this? And I think that for Rick Perry, someone who's already in single digits in the polls, has already squandered a very big lead and missed a lot of opportunities, the idea of skipping more debates would just kind of be seen as, all right, he doesn't really want it that bad. It's time for it's time for the not Romney folks to look elsewhere, if they're not already.
Exactly. This is a good application for Perry, I think, on the old line that you mentioned before, the soft bigotry of low expectations. At this point, people will be shocked if he can string a sentence together. So if he can go in there and make a really coherent case for his tax plan and his position on other issues to position himself as the strongest conservative in the race, he can do himself a world of good, because as we get closer and closer, more people are paying attention. And there'll be a lot of people who have only heard the rumors and the reports who will be tuning in as we get closer to the real voting. So a big mistake if he doesn't do that. Jim, we never cease to be amazed by some of these folks as these stories come along, but we'll figure out more of them tomorrow, I'm sure.
Sounds good, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.